Hey, all you pet stylists. You found the Groom Pod. Welcome to our virtual salon. My name is Susie, and I'm your host. I'm a mobile groomer from Seattle, Washington, and anyone who knows me will tell you I love to talk, especially about my job. One of my favorite people to talk to is my friend and mentor and star of the show from Tucson, Arizona, and groomblog.blogspot.com, Miss Barbara Bird.
Hello, groomers! Hi, Susie!
Good morning, Barbara Bird. How are you?
Hey, I'm hanging in there.
Excellent. Welcome to episode 76 of the Groom Pod, recorded on June 12th, 2016, in Snohomish, Washington, and Tucson, Arizona. This week on the Groom Pod, we will discuss the different types of grooming environments that are out there. We'll talk about this new fangled micro bubbles thingy. So you can join the discussion at facebook.com/group/thegroompod. You can subscribe to the Groom Pod on Stitcher, on iTunes, and on Google Play. And you can find all things Groom Pod related, including our Amazon banner and our donation button, at www.thegroompod.com. And remember to share it with all of your grooming buddies so that we can continue to grow. What's new this week? Brought to you by Barbara's Shopping Site. Shop for specialty grooming items at www.shop.bbird.biz. Shop with a groomer. It's good karma. All right, Barbara, I've got an announcement to make.
Da-da-da-da! What's up?
Well, Sun Young has paid my entire way to Super Zoo. Yep, I bought the ticket. I'm coming in. She paid the entire thing for me. Thank you so much, and I hope I did better on your name this time. Did you see the adorable video she sent? I had a difficult time figuring out how to pronounce her name, so she got her two children, a little boy and a little girl, to say, "My mom's name is," and then they pronounced it.
Sun Young.
It was so fantastic. And now we all want to learn a Korean word every day. From those two.
Yeah.
That was so cool. Shit. I just cannot thank her enough for doing that. And congratulations on your new ride, girl. She just got a nice, nice new car. So things are going well up there in Vancouver for her. And I'm so grateful that she did that for us. So this week, Barbara, I finally got around to pulling out the Soos shampoo. Is that the way you say that company?
S-O-O-S, Soos.
Yes, I've only used one of them so far. I used the deep cleaning one on a couple dogs yesterday. And I've got to say, so far, I think it's pretty nice shampoo. But I was reading the ingredient list, trying to figure out the whole Dead Sea salt scrub business ingredient follow-up thing, and I noticed it has mud in there, and I was wondering if you could explain to me what the benefits of using mud and mud packs and why they would put mud in the shampoo and that kind of thing.
Well, I can't off the top of my head.
Yes, this is an unrehearsed question for Barbara Bird.
Unrehearsed question. Basically, mud ingredients are clays. And what clays do is they adsorb dirt and debris and toxicants, okay? So they detoxify skin and they clean it by adsorbing onto them so it's not exactly like an anionic magnetic force, but it is a way of lifting and removing that has a cleaning action. So the reason for putting it in a shampoo would be primarily to add a detoxifying effect to the shampoo. But I've got to say that I'm not so sure about including a clay in a shampoo, as I'm not as comfortable with that being effective as I am in doing a separate mud bath or mud pack.
Madra Mud products?
Like the Madra Mud. Yeah, I've used the Madra Mud quite a bit, and I am impressed that it's an effective product, especially for sensitive skin and skincare issues. But I'm just not so sure how much of that effect you would get when you mix it in with a highly diluted shampoo.
So maybe that aspect is a little more marketing.
I think it's kind of probably marketing. I think a lot of what's going on with the Zeus products is marketing, and my use of the shampoos has been positive. But my biggest objection is that their ingredient lists are all wonky. They're not in order of appearance in the product, in order of volume in the product. They're in order of what the marketing department thought we would want to see.
That is sneaky.
And there's multitudinous herbal extracts, more than can be possibly effective. How much of a synergistic effect can you have if you have 128 herbal extracts?
That's quite the marinade.
It just doesn't impress me at all, and it's one of those overkill kind of marketing things where it makes it look like the natural ingredients overwhelm not so natural ingredients. But really, it's just a big tea. It's a big herbal tea, and it can only be up to 2% extracts in that, 5% total extracts and herbs and mud and dead sea salts cannot add up to more than 5%, or the whole system's going to break down and not work. So,
okay.
Herbs is going to have any chance of having an effect, and there's no research to indicate that 128 of them are better than two.
Right.
So that's my concern. But I've used the 2-in-1, and it was pretty good, although it didn't have a really great conditioning effect. I've used the mud bath one, and it was okay. And I want to use them some more and give some more feedback. So I give a qualified B-Bird approval, but it's kind of sensitive for me because I really liked the young girl who was the main person with the Zeus at the booth, and she's put her life savings and her future into that product. And that kind of hurts me when I see somebody that's kind of, I almost wonder, being used.
Yes.
To be honest, Susie, she's so gung-ho, and she so believes in her product, and she's been sold that this is going to be revolutionary. And I think it's a good product, but I don't think that it's going to replace all of our other shampoos.
Yeah, I agree. I did enjoy using it, though. So, okay, so back over to the mud thing. When you do this mud treatment, how does the mud come? And do you put it on the dog's hair and then let it sit there and then wash it off or feed or whatever you're using it on? I mean,
First of all, we do need to clarify that mud is originally intended more as a skin care item than a hair care item per se. Okay. And so, but what you do is you put the mud in, if you get the Madramore mud, and I haven't ever used the Esprit mud, but I'm going to assume that it's kind of a similar product. It's already diluted into a mucky substance. The biggest problem that I have with the Madramore mud is when you buy a gallon, it's really a bitch to get the last third of the product out of the gallon bottle, and you're squeezing it under your elbow and you're pressing it into the tub, and you're putting water in there and trying to shake it and get some more out. And how do you get that last third to last one quarter? And the stuff is too expensive to give up on the last third of the, it just like, it's got real frustration value. And the mud stuff from the gallon bottle, I hope that they come up with a larger opening gallon container or something in the future. So what was I saying? So you mix it with a little bit of water. You mix it with water and you spread it all over the dog. And then you let it sit. People who take mud baths, if you go to a spa place and they've got a mud hole, you sit in there for an hour.
Oh, okay.
So that's a treatment. It's a half an hour treatment for that mud. You know, you are not going to accomplish a whole lot in a 5-minute bath. It's got to sit on there for a while.
Okay, so this is another one of those products that maybe won't be all that helpful for me in my mobile situation.
Well, you have to charge more for your time. It's not a time efficient. It's a time added product, which requires that it be an add-on.
Okay.
It requires you to add on. I add on $10 to $15. You should probably add on $20 to $25 in your mobile situation. Because
it's going to add some serious time to me.
Yeah, yeah. It doesn't seem to add a lot of drying time or anything. It's not a waxy kind of coating that's going to take a long time to dry. And the de-shedding Madra Moore, boy, it really does release the hair. I mean, it just starts getting all over your hands when you're rubbing it in on the dog. I was surprised.
Okay, so after you sit in the mud puddle, then do you get up and take a shower? Like after you're done, after you've sat there with the mud on the dog, then you do the bathing?
Well, you can either do it. You know what? We do a mild shampoo first.
Okay.
And I sign them up for a mud bath treatment. I don't use a sulfate shampoo. That's when I go to a non-sulfate mild shampoo, a baby shampoo, a sulfate-free shampoo. I don't want to add that aggressiveness on the skin. So I want to, because that dog usually has a sensitive skin. So I want to use a very mild shampoo. And there again, the Bathing Beauty is a really good choice because of the way that it dilutes and recirculates the surfactant, so you don't have a high concentration of surfactant on the body of the dog. So you give them a nice, gentle, thorough cleansing, and then the mud bath, and then the rinse, and no conditioner.
Okay. Since the Madra Mud is the one that you're most familiar with, does it have an odor?
Listen, it's great smells. That line of products has good smells. She's really, Jacqueline, who is instrumental in designing the Madra Moore products, she's done a great job. Well thought through product line. And it's worth trying. And it really is an upgrade. But you've got to upsell it. You've got to make more money because it's costly and it takes more time.
Cool. Well, thanks for clearing that up. Is there anything you want to tell us about your week?
My week sucked, but I'll tell you about that some other time. We just had kind of personal devastation here yesterday. But other than that.
Other than that, here you are.
Other than that, I'm just fine.
Well, if you want to help Barbara out in her personal devastation, she has a special going on right now of an aromatherapy diffuser that's in the shopping cart at www. How many W's is that?
Just a bunch of W's. Shop.bbird.biz.
There you go. If you go there, you can get this really cool color-changing aromatherapy diffuser that has a very large reservoir for only $50?
$50.
$50. And that, I can promise you, is an extremely limited time price. It will be changing. I guarantee it'll be changing. There are not a lot of diffusers that are out there that have this big a reservoir and also have a shut-off function where you can set it for a certain period of time and it will shut off afterwards. And it's got the whole cool color scheme going on. Yeah, it's a cool diffuser, isn't it?
It is. It's attractive and it's very efficient, and it has a number of settings, and you can turn off the light thing. There's some people that are distracted by the cool changing lights, unlike those us old hippies. You know, it has a lot of adjustments that you can make to make it suit your particular situation, but it's very good for larger areas or extended diffusing.
Cool. Excellent. Guess what time it is now? What is it, girl? Is it a fire? Is it Barbara? It's Barbara. Is Barbara in the well? No. Oh, it's time for Tail Wagon Trivia.
Trivia this week, Susie.
Our trivia this week is, what is the smallest dog breed used for hunting?
Oh my God.
Yeah, so think about that. I don't know if I could have gotten it. I might have gone too small, but we will see at the end of the show. If you're enjoying the Groom Pod and all the good things that happen here, and you want to help us continue to grow, consider doing your shopping at Amazon through our Amazon banner on the website. It won't cost you anything more, and the Groom Pod will get a percentage of your sale. This is by far the best way to help us pay for the show. Just go to our website, www.thegroompod.com, scroll to the bottom, and click on the Amazon ad. Then do your shopping as usual. We really appreciate each and every one of you guys who's been shopping at the Groom Pod's website. Thank you very much. Ready, groomers? Here comes our first appointment. All right, over to our first appointment, which is about grooming environments. And one of the things that's so cool about our industry is there are so many different types of environments you get to work in, that you can choose to work in or that you can create to work in. So I wanted to talk to, and this is directly in response to me putting on Facebook, what do you guys want to hear about? The Madra Mud question and the mud question in general that came off of Facebook, the discussion group. And so does this question about what kind of grooming environments there are. So I'm just going to start by going through them one by one. And I think, and you can tell me what you think, Barbara, I think the most common grooming environment out there is the single groomer salon.
I think we probably are in the majority.
There may be or the small.
One or two yes. Groomer salons. Or groomer bather, you know. Just say 1 to 3 persons. I think that's pretty much the majority model.
And I have worked in that situation, and I know you work in that situation. So let's talk about some of the pros of working in that situation. For me, since I am an only groomer, or I was an only groomer in the situation, I like that I don't have somebody else to talk to because I am easily distracted. So having another groomer in the room, even if they're doing their own job, I think would probably slow me down a little bit. If you're a single groomer in your own shop, you have full control over the entire process. And I like that. I am kind of a control freak, and it makes me feel more comfortable to actually have control over the beginning product, the end product, every product that goes out the door. I've got full control and full say over. For me, I think that's a pro.
Well, you know, I'm gonna contradict that a little bit because
okay.
Model. I've had my shop for 39 years now, going on 39 years, and at least 30 of those years, it's been me and a bather. So that's the model that I started with, and that's the model that I have now. I had a period of years where I worked all by myself. But I really like that working with a bather. And right now, I could no longer work solo. I have to have someone around to help with. Gee, this week, we did a Australian Terrier hand strip of a real bouncy, wiggly Australian Terrier that we do 2 or 3 times a year. And I could not hand strip that dog all by myself. And as a matter of fact, I can't hand strip all the way any dogs anymore because of this trigger thumb thing that's happening with my hands. And so my bather, I've taught her how to pluck hair, and she's gotten real good at it. It's, you know, like it's not as technical as teaching people how to scissor or seeing lines and form. She just has to pull to length, and she's learned how to do it. And we ended up teaming up on that little girl so that we could get it done in a reasonable amount of time. I still charged the guy $125, which accounted for both of our times. But I couldn't do that dog by myself, even with restraints and all of that. Restraints are kind of funny with hand strips, because you have to have a certain angle. You know, you have to turn the dog in a certain way that isn't just the profile that you can work on when you're scissoring or clipping. And then there are other dogs that are either sensitive or old or feeble, and I really need to have Yvonne there to give a little bit of support for the dog and for me. And we just team up on everything, and I couldn't do it by myself. Of course, you give up some control. You're right, Susie. You give up some control, and then that leads you to be able to be angry about things. It leaves you open for kind of a grumpiness factor when they don't get the hair over the hock straight enough. You know, right. I want my, you know, I'm doing Bichon Frise's poodles with puffs. That hair on the back of the hock, it's got to be right, because if it's all wrinkly and curly, it just screws up my grooming. It reduces the end result. So, you know, you've got to be willing to give and take and put up a little disappointment here and there. Right. And be able to supervise somebody and how to tell them this ain't good enough and stuff like that. So it's more of a challenge, but there is benefits to having that other person. Plus, when you have another person, somebody can let it take a dog out while you continue scissoring on the dog on your table, or the people are going to come in 10 minutes.
Right. I call that the built-in support system. And that is certainly something that I have no experience with anymore. 10 years.
I honor you for that. Yeah, yes. I did a number of years. And not only did I have not only was I grooming by myself, but I had retail sales going on and I was selling dog food and supplies and stuff, and people would just bounce in and do shopping in the middle of a grooming.
Okay, that just makes you a glutton for punishment. That's crazy talk.
I know. I'm glad I got out of that model. You got to think about, before you do retail, is are you going to be able to take time out of your grooming to sell and work with shoppers?
Yes.
What about the at-home groomers? I noticed the other day a sign in front of a home on my main thoroughfare, Grant Road. I was going to the bank, and there's a new pet grooming in her home. I guess it's a her. It could be a he. In the home on my way to the bank. So I wanted to catch the phone number and call him and say hi. I'm kind of shy to do that, but I wish we were a little bit more welcoming to the competition around us, you know? Hi, how you doing? I noticed you got some grooming going at your home. How's it going?
I have stopped by some of our local groomers' homes that have signs out in front of their house. I've popped in there. I've met some of them on the internet. It does it to you. You have to be brave. You have to be willing to go in there, and sometimes you walk out and go, okay, maybe that was an interesting person. And other times you go, wow, I've got a new best friend. Yeah, I encourage that. With the in-house grooming where you're at your own house, one of those challenges is you never get to go home from work, you know, because work is always downstairs. And reading on Facebook, so many people don't respect your hours. They show up before, they come after, they expect you to hang on to their dogs. Those would be the challenges, I imagine, in your in-home type grooming situation. So what about the large grooming salons? Have you ever worked in a shop that has like five or more groomers?
No, I think the most where I worked was four.
Still, that's a large shop.
It was a more volume. It was like three or four groomers. Well, see, I was a half groomer, half bather at that place. That was where I apprenticed. And, you know, like I got my learning by doing bathing for $2 an hour, you know, in the old days. $2 an hour, Susie. God. But it seemed like a fair exchange at the time. And so I was kind of a part-time bather, part-time groomer. You know, we would have maybe 25 dogs a day in and out of there. You know,
that's a lot of turnover.
I mean, it was a boarding situation, too. So we had border dogs that we had to bathe and that kind of stuff. So there's a lot going on in that situation.
If you're working for a big shop like that, it can be a corporate store, maybe, or it could be a privately owned kind of a place. But oftentimes when you've got that many employees, you probably offer a benefit package of some sort. So that's something to look at when you go to a big place like that. Perhaps opportunity to move up is available in a place like that as well. Those are a couple of things you don't get in the smaller shop environment. Maybe some more flexibility with your schedule. Sometimes if there's more employees, you get more flexibility. If you don't want to work Wednesdays, perhaps you can get Wednesday off because somebody else wants to work it and you work Saturday. So those are some of the good things about those big kind of shops. The bad stuff that happens in there is it can get a little competitive. Sometimes you don't get to pick what you get to use for your products. And then there's policies and rules.
Get assigned dogs.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's, ugh.
Well, you're right. I never thought of that.
Cocker that's shitting on my table. You know, like, I did her last month.
Right. Yeah, that would be tricky, actually. You know, like the used car salesman running up to get the guy who comes in who looks like they have money.
Yeah.
Same thing. The biting shih tzu, everybody runs the other direction, and low man on the totem pole gets that dog.
Or there's the bossy boss that just allocates according to his or her whim.
Right, teacher's favorite.
Yeah, that's what we had. We had boss's favorite. Well, actually, we had one girl who did only poodles. And this was in the 70s when poodles were a big thing. So poodles were a big part of our business. And she did only toy and miniature poodles. The boss did all the standard poodles because he was a standard poodle breeder and handler. And he did also all the exotic, you know, the Airedales and the exotic terriers. I did all the little schnauzers, and then I got to do all the cockers. I got all the throwaway stuff.
Right.
I was low one on the totem pole because I was the apprentice. So that's the way that it worked.
Yeah. And, you know, there's the, I am going to carefully choose my language. And there is the fact that there are a lot of personalities working in an environment. Sometimes that creates challenges just in the personality demographics around.
Yeah.
See, I cleaned up my women bashing.
Yeah, good. You do better than I am.
I'm learning. All right. Well, you said that the big shop you worked in was actually a kennel. And that is another place, another type of environment you can end up in. Grooming at a boarding kennel can be stressful, I understand. We had some boarding at the vet hospital, so I know a little bit about that. But there are a lot of people working in a boarding kennel that are not groomers. So dealing with non-groomers in your work environment can be challenging because there are parts of grooming they just don't understand. So what was it like for you in the boarding, with the boarding aspect going on? Did you have to do boarding baths?
We had to do boarding baths. And we had to clean out kennels. Although I kind of exempted myself from the, I was when I was beginning, and in the beginning I had a, you know, like a fear of feces, I guess you would call it.
A fecal aversion.
Unlike the other day, I mean, unlike nowadays, where I just like jump right on it, I would just like run gagging in the other direction. Even when I first opened my shop, I had a fecal fear response, you know. But it was so bad that, you know, like there was no way that you could get me at the kennel at 8 o'clock in the morning and then stick my head in dog shit. You know, like, I couldn't do that.
Yeah.
So I got other crummy tasks during the day to make up. I guess I was a diva even in my very early days. There were other tasks that were assigned. I mean, they really needed a kennel cleaner person. And every now and then there would be some desperate person hired for a little while that would do that kind of stuff. But a lot of times it fell on the staff, and we also had German Shepherd boarding dog baths and stuff that we had to work in amongst our poodles and schnauzers and that kind of stuff. And that always, it used up resources.
You know? And sometimes the compensation for the boarding bath dogs is not good. Yeah. So like at the vet hospital, they'd want me to do boarding baths for like $20 when I was getting $45 for regular grooming baths. And I had to explain, and there you go, working with non-grooming employees and professionals. They don't think about the fact that you get a commission for the regular dogs, and then they throw these other dogs on top. And sometimes you don't even get the schedule until the morning you show up with the boarding dogs. It can be a challenge.
Right, right.
Yeah. There's usually a steady flow of dogs, though, at those boarding kennels. So you don't, you know, right. Your downtime isn't too bad. You've got a lot of stuff to do. You can pick up side work, like you were saying, if you need extra stuff to do. You get boarding and daycare benefits sometimes. So if you go on vacation, your dog can stay there.
Right. And that's a benefit sometimes working for a vet, right?
Yes, it is. And we'll move right on to that, working for a vet. That's the thing I have the most experience in, because all I've ever done is work at a vet. One of those vets had three groomers at once. I was in training, but two other groomers on top of me. So I've done that. But then I went straight to mobile and never really did a little bit of in-home grooming, and then went to mobile. So just like the kennel situation, the vet hospitals range in size tremendously. So you get the small privately owned, you know, just a handful of runs, or a small two office, two doctor kind of a place, or a one doctor office, to the multi-doctor gigantic facilities that have boarding and daycare and grooming and the swim spa and the holistic doctors. We've got this place that is fairly close to my house that has everything in it you could possibly want. They have a fertility clinic for dogs, cats, and horses. I mean, it's just this massive facility, down to the guy I worked for was just one doctor in a strip mall with two examination rooms. So they vary a lot. The vet benefits are generally really good. I mean, I have never worked for a vet anywhere that didn't give me extremely discounted vet care, as long as what you're within reason. I mean, if you've got 20 dogs at home, he may not do it for all 20 dogs. But even the guy that I worked for that had two facilities gave us 4 free cat or dog dentals a year. All vaccines and exams were free. Medication was discounted. Lab work was discounted. I mean, that for people like us, I mean, I don't think there's any of us that don't have a house full of pets of some sort. That vet care, that is a huge, huge benefit in my eyes. Also, if you get into the big places, there's job benefits, you know, healthcare. Well, not, you know, who knows what's going to go on with that. But you get paid vacation, you get days off if you're sick, stuff like that. And the worst thing to deal with at the vet office is that you end up with the worst of the worst dogs. You know, you end up with the dogs that are hard to deal with, that may need sedation, that have health problems. And oftentimes the groomers at the vet hospitals are starting out. They're newer groomers. They're coming out of a school and they're ending up there. And oftentimes you don't get to scissor a poodle in Continental with bracelets or anything like that. You may not even see a standard poodle unless it has horrible health issues. So you're limited in what the dogs that come through at the vet hospital. You're also dealing with people who are not groomers that may limit your availability to products. Unless you're buying your own products, then you get what the vet decides you get. I don't like that. I actually find that to be really restrictive, is not to be able to choose.
I don't like not being able to choose products either. And that happens in many places where you're an employee. And the other thing that I don't like is when someone else takes in the dog, you know, gives a verbal contract of what's going to be done, and then translates that to you and dumps the dog on your table, and you don't know exactly what that owner said.
Yeah, that's a boarding kennel thing. That's a bad boarding kennel thing, because you may not be there when that dog drops off.
Yeah.
You're right. That is really a difficult thing to work with.
It's a weakness in a system, because things can go wrong. It's a communication juncture that's at risk right there.
Yep. Cool things that happen at the vet hospital is you have great support staff. So you have people around you who are educated in animal restraint. So if you do need help, you've got hands-on help and it's close. Plus, not to mention the occasional ooh-ooh or boo-boo or owie that happens in the grooming shop, you have the vet staff right there. And for me, I loved that aspect of working at the vet hospital. And, you know, the puppies. And the puppies come in for their shots. And you're right there. And they refer the vet. If your vet is good, he refers the puppies to you for grooming. And then you have a lifetime supply of puppy dogs coming in that will stay with you until they're old. So that's a cool thing you get. Yep, I really appreciated that. But vets as a whole, veterinarians, are a very unique breed of people. They're their own breed of people. And some can be extremely difficult to work with. And they don't understand grooming. And as in the big picture, grooming does not make them a lot of money. It's more a service they provide for their customers. So because of that, sometimes the interactions between the vets and the groomers are not as easy as they always have been for me. I've heard stories. I've never experienced it because I've always been treated very fairly by all the hospitals I ever worked at. So moving on. The in-home or house call grooming. I know you did that for a little while, didn't you?
No, I didn't do that.
Well, you do with the cats.
Well, I did a couple of cats in-home.
Okay. And, well, then,
you know, I've done some, you know, I had an old dog that I groomed for 10 years, and then the lady got old and the dog got old, and I went to her house, and I did it at her house. But, you know, basically I never was an in-house groomer. But my friend Leah in California is an in-house groomer and has been for years. And she's got a nice little business going. That can really work for some people. You know,
I get it.
System. And I had some conversations with a woman in New York City who did an in-house, because mobile in the intense urban area is almost impossible, but there's a real demand for in-house in apartment.
Right. Yep. That makes great, perfect sense. Nowhere to park in there.
Nowhere to park. And you just got to have what you can carry on the bus or in the cab or whatever. And then you go to the expensive high rise and zip up there in the elevator and then trim the dogs.
Right. So I did it for a couple of years. When I had first started to learn how to groom, I cultivated an in-home grooming business and groomed after work and on the weekends and in the evenings. And I was able to build up my business that way. The worst part about it is hauling your stuff in and out. That is by far the worst. I took in a clipper vac and a HydroSurge unit and then my dryer and my table and all my grooming equipment. It would take me 3 trips in and out from the car to get my stuff in. But a good thing and a bad thing is you're really up close and personal with your clients. I mean, you are right there in their house, in amongst their lives. You know, there's not a lot of secrets that take place when you're not right inside of their house. So it's great for me. It works out really well. I get treated with lots of goodies and as part of the family. But it can also be awkward. As I read on Facebook, one of the mobile groomers arriving to pick up a dog to find Uncle Willie playing with his Willie in the front room when she came in the door.
So, oh, my God.
Oh, yeah. So these things happen. These are just things you have to deal with when you're up close and personal and inside someone's house or even as a mobile groomer. Pets can tend to be a little more relaxed at their house. That, too, can work either for or against you. Sometimes they're naughtier and sometimes they're nicer. Definitely the humans are a lot more relaxed when you're doing their dog right in front of their house or right inside of their house. But it can also be a big distraction having the client there. You have to give them rules and boundaries and limitations so that they stay out of your way or out of sight lines of the dogs, or even don't make any noise so that their pets aren't distracted while you're grooming on them. Another thing is the grooming space in someone's house can be a little challenging. You can end up in a bathroom or a laundry room where you're dealing with, you don't want to blow hair, even in a kitchen. You don't want to blow hair around.
You have to put down an ironing board? I have.
I have. It, but it was at Atlanta Pet Fair.
I have in a hotel too, but I've also groomed cats, and that would be the first thing I would ask them for. Do you have a good ironing board? And cats are pretty good. It's perfect table for cats.
And it's just a little bit wiggly, so they probably behave a little better.
Yeah, they just hang on.
Yeah. So cleanup is a challenge when you're in somebody's house. The hair blowing is a challenge. Bathing can be a challenge because you might have to be on your hands and knees in somebody's traditional bathtub, which, you know, is not good for groomer longevity at all. But, you try to work around that. The interference of people's children in your house, people who don't keep. That was the thing that drove me the most bananas.
I know. That would drive me out of the house.
Yes. But just like mobile grooming, it is a very specialized and kind of a luxury service. So the money's pretty good if you can, if you don't mind hauling your stuff in and out and dealing with all those little idiosyncrasies. The money is good. You don't have to work. You don't have to do so many pets. You can do them in somebody's house. Not to mention the whole they feed you and you have a bathroom right around the corner. And that bathroom thing, that's a real challenge when you step over to mobile grooming, which is, of course, what I've been doing for the last 10 years. And we know that you did a little bit of mobile, Barbara.
6 months.
Yep. So you can either end up doing your own thing as a mobile groomer.
Like miserable months.
Miserable months. Yeah, it's not for everybody. So you've got the option to own your own mobile grooming business. You could work for a fleet, someone who owns a fleet of mobile grooming vans. We have a lady here who owns two or three. I can't remember if she might be up to three now. Or you can end up with a franchise.
I worked for a franchise called Galloping Groomers, and it was a fleet. And
yes.
It was agony. Because they wanted the groomers to all be interchangeable. They wanted my schnauzer grooming to look like everybody else's Cocker Spaniel skirt, hula skirt, schnauzers, you know?
Wow. Yep.
Ugh.
I couldn't do it.
And so what happened was that I would do my way of grooming, and then I would get all the requests, and then that would cause a great upheaval of the system.
Yeah. Little jealousies, you know, it happens. Yeah. Everybody's got to make a living. Nobody wants to lose dogs. Yep. So I love the fact that I have freedom from fixed structures, that I get to move around, that I'm outside, I get to interact with the environment. I love all of that. You get the up close and personal thing as a mobile groomer as well, but at least your dog is out in your grooming vehicle, so you don't necessarily have the owner's children bothering you, or the owners bothering you, or the nanny or personal assistant or whoever is running around in the house. Once again, dogs are more relaxed at home. For me, I have no time stresses as a mobile groomer because I have eliminated them by telling people I'll be there sometime after 2:00. So they know that they need to be home at 2:00 and they better not plan anything else for the rest of the day because I get to be late, but they don't.
how it worked when I was a mobile, I would get to work at 7:30 to get my van and get on the road. I had an 8:00 appointment. I had a 9:30 appointment. I had an 11:00 appointment, you know, and so on through the day. My day was structured like that every single day, you know, unless it was a 2-dog appointment and then it would be a little bit more time. But, you know, like I had an hour and 15 minutes to do any dog in any style and 15 minutes to get to the next place in any huge apartment complex in any part of the city, you know. Oh, man. And I would be like 70 miles an hour down this back road with my scissors and everything flopping in the breeze in the back and trying to get to my next appointment and couldn't find the goddamn apartment D building.
You know, and then I can relate.
Jesus. And then I would blow their electrics out because it was all this plug-in thing. I had to plug into their electricity and, you know, I'd blow them out. And then what? Oh, man, it was so stressful.
As a mobile groomer, it's helpful to be handy with the tools and a little bit mechanical.
Much better to be mobile when you can have the control over your own schedule. It's agony if you're working under some non-groomer's idea of how long it should take you to do your appointments.
Yeah, that non-groomer thing pops up a lot, actually. It's a challenge to work with people who don't understand the grooming process. So bad things about mobile grooming, we'll just kind of speed through this last little bit, is you're by yourself most of the time.
I know a person that actually went over the edge.
In their own
over the edge in the, started talking to Jesus in that van. Yep. And I couldn't stop. And
a lot of alone time, a lot of in your head time. If something goes wrong, you're by yourself. I mean, you have a phone, you can call the owner. Hopefully he's in the house.
Tongue and tried to stop it with Quick Stop.
Yep. Yeah. So there are issues.
Don't ever do that.
Yeah. But you know, if you like yourself like I do, I'm okay with that alone time. I actually prefer it. It's good for me. Like, mobile grooming is not for everybody. Just like in-home grooming is not for everybody. Just like working in a shop is not for everybody. But the beauty of grooming and our industry is we have this wide variety of places you can work and environments and choices that you can make in your life that will continue to make you love your job until you're a gazillion years old. So there we are. That's going to wrap up. Yes, like Barbara. A survivor. I love it.
Okay. A gazillion years old.
Nah, you're not. You're working your way that direction, but there's still, you've still got some time to go. All right, Barbara.
The definition du jour.
I have been reading a lot about this microbubble technology stuff. Can you enlighten us a little bit on that?
Okay, I would love to dig into this a little bit, and I've done considerable reading, and I want to go back on something that I said a few months ago when I touched on this. At that point, I thought that the essence of microbubbles was to add more oxygen to the water, and that's not true.
Okay.
So it's not an oxygenated water type technology. It's simply little teeny tiny bubbles. And the idea is that the small microbubbles are better able to penetrate the skin pores and the and remove sebum and debris and use old keratin skin waste than regular bathing, and it supposedly has a longer lasting effect. But there's these kind of claims made for microbubble cleansing that don't have any science behind them.
Okay.
Microbubble technology has been around for a while, and there's actually many uses for microbubbles, including cleaning oyster shells.
Is it like the Sonicare toothbrush?
Well, that's a good question.
Yeah. Well, if you didn't,
because it does. They do imply that the microbubbles might oscillate, and the microbubbles when they go through their machine to make the microbubbles, it creates the bubbles as being slightly anionic, right?
Okay. So right.
Have a little negative charge, and so in that respect, they work a little bit like a surfactant. But here's the deal: the microbubble. There's two major companies that are offering microbubble technology for pet grooming. One is a TheraClean, and then there's this other one, this microbubble wash system. And both of those systems come from the same place. They're the same Japanese inventor. And I just I'm not on board. Let me just say that. I am not on board. And one of the reasons is that I just don't accept the premise that the microbubbles are going to clean better than all other forms of cleaning. And I also don't accept that all other washing systems are more harsh or going to contribute to skin sensitivity and skin problems. The both of those systems, as well as some microbubble systems for human baths, like walk-in baths have microbubble systems, they all use the same three diagrams, the same three graphics. There's these same three pictures. The first one shows a picture of a big bubble and then a little tiny teeny bubble. Okay, I get it. That's a regular So that's an okay diagram. Thank you. I get it. Then there is an illustration that shows the microbubbles exploding inside the water and the regular bubbles exploding on the surface of the water. Okay, maybe. And they show the microbubbles picking up the electromagnetic force. Okay, maybe. All right?
Maybe only because it's got that charge, the negative charge. Yeah.
Okay. So I can accept that their special machine makes the microbubbles. But I'm going to tell you, I have a natural skepticism about medical or health machines as being quackery. Okay. Right. So the third picture that they have in all three of these, it's always the same pictures that are from the same source. The third picture shows a hair follicle in the skin, right? And it shows the little microbubbles all going all down the side of the hair follicle to the very base of the hair follicle. And they're implying that their microbubbles are cleaning out the hair follicle all the way to the root. And that is not possible.
Okay.
Okay, now here again, remember when we talked about Greek yogurt shampoo? And I told you that it was not possible for the nutrients of Greek yogurt or any other nutrient to go to the root of the hair and the follicle. Because because when you see these dummied down pictures, diagrams of the hair shaft, it looks as though there's space between the hair follicle and the hair shaft, that somehow nutrients or water or microbubbles can go down there, and that is not true. It's all part of the skin.
No entrance.
Hair does not grow. It is not growing out of the skin. It is of the skin. It is all part of the skin. Each hair follicle, in addition to having the outer hair cuticle, it has an outer hair sheath, an inner hair sheath, and a glassy membrane around it. And that all disappears into the skin tissue. So this is all of the skin tissue that is formed. And in the middle of this is the hair follicle reaching up. But it has not got space for stuff to go down in and around it. And there's no way that those microbubbles can go down there. There's not enough pressure. There's not enough. We cannot penetrate the skin that much to be deep cleaning around there. At the most, it can clean a little bit deeper into the hair pore.
So that raises a red flag for sure, because
that raises a huge red flag, because that's misleading information. And there's no SEM photographs showing, highly magnified photographs showing the presence of microbubbles down around the inner part of the hair follicle. There's no science showing that a comparison group of dogs bathed with process A and dogs bathed with microbubbles had less bacteria remaining on the skin after the bath or 10 days later or any, there's no, they say in their patent, and I read a lot of these very difficult to read patents. I should get paid.
I was going to say, that's why you really should get the big bucks.
It is hard. I'm going to go to my notes here for a minute if I can. So the inventor of the microbubble washing system for pets and animals has several patents going back to 2007.
Okay.
So he's been working on this. And there's another Japanese, this is all Japanese, this Japanese guy, this honor, he is not a medical person, he is not a scientist, he is described as being an honorable person.
Okay.
So here's something from TheraClean. They say, they're talking about the size of the bubbles, and they say, to be effective for deep cleaning skin, the bubbles should be less than 25 micrometers in size and larger than 2. This allows them to penetrate hair follicles and skin pores while not passing through epidermis.
What?
What?
That's impossible.
How can you get to the hair follicle without passing through the epidermis? And excuse me, but are these bubbles not dissolved in water?
Yes.
The water is the vehicle, Susie. The water has to go there in order for the bubbles to be there. You know, so it says, properly generated microbubbles carry a slight negative charge. Okay, I can go for that. This attracts positively charged molecules of dander, sebum, and other organic matter. Some of the bubbles actually oscillate and implode from increased water pressure, giving off significant energy, which aids in dislodging organic waste. And they mentioned that the water temperature may raise.
Well, yeah, because the atoms are more active.
So in one of their several patents, the inventors of the present invention, which is the microbubble machine plus their washing substance, the inventors of the present invention have conducted extensive studies in order to achieve the above object, which is the deep cleaning. And as a result, the inventors have found that sebum and old keratin adhering to the surfaces of the pores of a human body or an animal and waste sebum inside the pores can be reliably removed in a short period of time so that the skin can be kept clean for a long period of time, skin disease can be prevented, and the healing of skin disease can be accelerated by using a washing liquid obtained by adding a microbubble washing composition, including a protease and lipase to water, and so on and so forth. So,
They're saying that if you have shampoo, it's going to clean. I mean, is that what they're just saying?
They're saying that you got to use their stuff. They're saying that they've got a stuff. They've got a washing solution that works with the microbubbles to create the positive effect. Okay?
Okay.
So they say they've conducted extensive studies, but if you look to their references, there's no references to any studies. No references to any studies.
Right.
They have a reference to a review in the International Journal of Pharmacy and Life Sciences, the title of which is Microbubbles and Its Applications. Okay, this reference shows up in the patent, but that review is talking about the use of microbubbles in sonograms and the use of microbubbles as a vehicle for medication, you know, like you encompass the microbubbles with the medicated product and
right,
it gets
a medication delivery system.
Yeah, medication delivery system. It has nothing that microbubble and its applications has nothing about cleaning human or animal skin. There's no science to this. There's no comparison studies. There's no evidence that microbubble cleansing with their special stuff makes for better cleansing than traditional shampooing. There's no comparisons. There's no support for that assumption.
Okay, the Groom Pod is going to dub microbubble technology as hokum.
I've got to say that because you have to use their special stuff.
Yeah, okay. Which is basically shampoo, right? It's going to be shampoo.
Well, we're going to, let's not call it shampoo. Let's give them their term, washing agent.
Okay, washing agent.
So the TheraClean says to further this process, the deep cleaning, right?
Yeah.
The TheraClean system also utilizes a natural plant-based enzyme powder that further softens and helps dislodge debris and allowing the microbubbles to adhere to and remove waste. Okay, so what is this solution?
Yes, what is it?
In there, one of their patents is a hair growth system.
Oh, my.
One of their earlier patents. I mean, so they've been fooling around trying to find applications for this microbubble washing system. And the microbubble washing system includes the microbubble machine and the washing agent. Their patent says it is particularly preferable that the composition, the washing agent, includes sodium hydrogen carbonate, sodium sulfate, and borax.
Oh, okay. That's
so we're getting a little hint by reading the patent. I'm getting to know what some of the ingredients are. The alkali metal salt, that's the above, is used in an amount of 80 to 99.5%.
Wow.
So the enzyme, the lipase and the protease, is just a minor component. But you know what? The company for which this Japanese patent is applied is the enzyme, is an enzyme manufacturer.
Oh. 5 degrees
so
of separation.
Basically, yeah, the Japanese got to help them find applications for their product, you know, and this inventor has this thing. So the washing composition, according to the present invention, includes sodium hydrogen carbonate, sodium sulfate, and borax. And then there's some percentages of each. And then it says it is preferable that the composition also include a silica-based desiccant. This is, it's a washing powder.
Okay.
It's not a shampoo. It's a washing powder and you add a scoop of it. Okay, so that's interesting. But it's got a silica. And then examples of additional, according to the present invention, may optionally further include an additional component. Oh, that's interesting. Okay, examples of the additional component include inorganic salts other than the above alkali metal salts, a perfume, a coloring agent, an antiseptic agent, an antibacterial agent, a tackiness agent, a therapeutic component, and other additives normally used for a washing agent.
Okay. So their cleaning stuff has some variety in it. So, like, they can make it an antiseptic cleaner or a...
I think
leaves it open.
It leaves it open, you know. But all of the propaganda for this microbubbles will tell you that although they claim that the microbubbles clean by themselves, they're going to say for best effect to use their washing solution, right?
Right.
A third company that I found, which is the Pet Total Skincare, they have the microbubbles and they add an Ayurvedic herbal treatment. So it says this, after the skin is thoroughly cleaned with using the Japanese stuff, right?
Right.
It's important to protect it from infection, UV rays, dehydration, and contact. A pet skin that is washed using the microbubble wash system is as vulnerable as a newborn, and it is important to use a safe and natural method to protect it. Canine to Five's Animal Ayurvedic Herb Mixture protects and moisturizes skin by using a combination of herbs based on 5,000-year-old Ayurvedic principles. The herb packs are combined to provide effective long-term skin protection and have been certified organic in 5 countries. That is quackery.
That is quackery. Even I can recognize that.
Quackery. And I'm not saying that Ayurvedic medicine is quackery, no, but just using something that you've pulled out of and claiming it to be Ayurvedic and not giving the ingredients and saying that because it's been used for 5,000 years, that's all symptoms of quackery. Utilizing only case studies, but
broad,
just broad, you know, like customer anecdotes.
Yeah.
That's an indication of quackery. There's just a lot of quackery flags. Having a special mechanism that only you provide. Having a special washing agent that has to be that washing agent. That's all signs of quackery.
Yep. You know?
It's just this one, it quacks like a duck, and I've got to call it like it is. Quack,
okay.
Quack, quack.
No, it's good, though, because it's one of those things I've been very curious about. So
Yeah, I felt like I had to go into a little bit further depth rather than just telling you that I thought it was junk science. See,
yeah.
Junk science is all the business about how they claim these microbubbles work.
Yes.
It just, you know, like... I just cannot accept something that it is based on a dumbed down drawing of a hair follicle as though it was a flower root. It just doesn't skin. It the hair follicle is a part of the skin. It is surrounded and tightly compacted within the skin. You would have to penetrate the skin to get down into the hair follicle any more than just the first few layers of stratum corneum at the top, where there's a little bit of a cave that is the pore. Okay?
Mythbusters groom pod style.
Thank you.
Yes. Okay. Well, let's get our trivia question answered. How's that? What's your guess, Barbara? What is the smallest breed used for hunting?
I was going to say dachshund.
You win again. You are too savvy.
Weak and bright.
Yep. 2 weeks in a row, the brilliance shines through. Yep, they are the littlest hunting dog out there, and they're still used for hunting today, apparently, although I've never met one who was used for hunting.
Have you seen any of those videos that show, like, packs of dachshunds running through the fields?
They're so
like,
funny.
They're so cute.
They are. Well, I want to mention that Super Zoo is coming up the first week in August, and Barbara will be speaking at Super Zoo, and I will be firmly planted on her coattails, thanks to Sun Young for sending me. And I'm so looking forward to that. You guys, if you want to come find us at Super Zoo, I will be sporting a Groom Pod t-shirt and tie-dye at the same time because I've got a new shirt coming out. So you'll be able to find me. Barbara will be dressed to kill because she always likes to look good when she's speaking. But you'll be able to find us because we're always together. And we look forward to talking to all you guys in person at Super Zoo. Right, Barbara?
Right on. I can't wait to make new friends and reconnect with old friends. And I welcome all the Arizona groomers. Well, you know, everybody, one place where we're sure to be, Susie and I, is at the rescue roundup. We're committed to that.
Yes.
Right, Susie?
Absolutely. Yeah, and we are going to be everywhere. We're going to be ubiquitous. We're going to be roaming that trade show floor. We're going to be speaking, and we're going to be, Barbara's going to be speaking in those seminars, and I'm going to be doing my sidekickery. It's going to be great. Barbara, don't choke on me over there.
I'm joking. I know. I'm sorry.
All right. Well, so Barbara can actually go get some air along with that drink of water. I think we're going to wrap it up. Thank you for joining us this week on the Groom Pod. As always, happy grooming and see you next time. Thanks a lot. Bye-bye.
Hey, bye, groomers. Bye, Susie.
Well, stylists, it's time to sweep up the hair, clean out the tub, and turn out the lights on another episode of the Groom Pod. Remember to join the discussion group and be part of the show by liking us on Facebook at The Groom Pod. You can find Barbara online at groomblog.blogspot.com and at her shopping site, www.shop.bbird.biz. You can email me at Susie, S-U-S-Y, at thegroompod.com or Barbara at barbara@thegroompod.com. Please tell all your friends about the show and leave comments and reviews anywhere that you can. And also, please support the sponsors of the show. They make it possible for us to continue on. So on behalf of Barbara Bird and myself, thanks for listening and see you real soon.